would like to welcome you to the PrepareForChange.net radio show each and every Sunday from 9 to 10 p.m. at bbsradio.com station 1. We hope you'll join us each and every week and perhaps check out the website www.prepareforchange.net. The show today is for Sunday, June 21st, 2015. I'm Judy Amber Chase, co-chair of the Prepare for Change Media Group, and I'm here in the studio with the Prepare for Change Renaissance Group co-chair, Dove. Thank you so much, Dove. We are delighted to bring you one of the fabulous Contact in the Desert speakers, Reverend Michael Carter, today, and Dove and I will be speaking with him shortly via Skype. I wanted to tell you a little bit about his background. He is an ordained interfaith minister. He graduated from the New Seminary Interfaith Temple in New York City and received his Master's in Divinity degree from the prestigious Union Theological Seminary in New York City. Reverend Michael Carter has served various Unitarian Universalist churches in the New York City and surrounding areas. He was trained as an anti-racism trainer by the denomination, being recognized by President Clinton for his efforts. He also worked as a hospital chaplain in the Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens, New York area, as well as in Asheville, North Carolina. He is a frequent commentator on the History Channel's TV show Ancient Aliens, where he discusses his book Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. His book advances the hypothesis of the possibility of ancient astronauts originating the monotheistic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. He's also made numerous radio and TV appearances on the topic of UFOs and religion. He's a longtime UFO experiencer. He lectures extensively on the topic of religion and UFOs and has appeared on the Sci-Fi Channel's production of Steven Spielberg's Abduction Diaries. Also the Real 4400, Coast to Coast AM. So we're looking forward to speaking with him this evening. So as you know, I just returned from the Contact in the Desert conference in Joshua Tree Retreat Center, and it was brilliant this year. I had never been before, and my friend Dave Norwoods had always said to me, Judy, you would love this conference. You need to go. So when my friend Paul Andrews, who was one of the two producers, asked me if I would introduce some of the keynote speakers, I said, sure, why not? So I was there as one of five MCs to introduce these fantastic speakers. And one of my favorite experiences at the Contact in the Desert conference was the outstanding panels that were held in the outdoor amphitheater. Everybody would bring these fold-up chairs and sit under a canopy, and we had this big outdoor stage. It was just beautiful out under the stars, especially the ones that were held at night. Anyway, on the first day of the conference, I was scheduled to introduce Reverend Michael Carter at the amphitheater. And he was going to be speaking on the topic of A Shattered Reality, A Clergyman's Response to Contact. Anyway, I was at the side of the stage. I stepped out onto the stage, and there was this fantastic upbeat rock music playing. And there was Reverend Carter on the stage, and he and I just looked at each other and just started dancing. I thought this was so fun to introduce a reverend this way at the conference. And kind of got a little bit out of breath when it came time to formally introduce him. One of the other MCs was unable to introduce Reverend Carter the next day and asked me to do it, and I was delighted to accept. Later on at dusk on that first evening, I was at the panel at the outdoor amphitheater on UFOs, spirituality, and the evolution of consciousness with an outstanding lineup of speakers. There was Laura Eisenhower, James Gilliland, Linda Moulton Howe, Daniel Sheehan, and Dr. Dream, as well as Reverend Michael Carter. So I wanted to start off our program today by asking Reverend Carter to share a little bit about his experience being on that panel. James Gilliland had been speaking about ways that people can meditate and actually call in the galactic crafts. And I wanted to ask if consciousness can actually bring about contact. So let me say welcome, Reverend Michael Carter. And can consciousness bring about contact?
Yes, I believe consciousness can bring about contact. But I don't know if that means that everyone who attempts it is successful. But if our thoughts are things, And if, which they are, quantum physics and metaphysics tells us that, then we have the events of our lives that we create.
And so, I mean, consciousness is what we're experiencing right now, two, three people interacting, connecting, communicating, breaking through, you know, time and space to share what's in our hearts and our thoughts right now at this moment. So when we're open to, what do we need to be open to connect to higher intelligence in our, you know, our own higher self too? How is it a listening? Is it a place of being receptive?
Yeah, I think it's a place of being. I mean, even though we're not human doings, and you can't heal being by doing. And so I think it's about being open to possibilities. And I think the heart open, because in consciousness, at least in my experience, it's all about intent. It's all about intentionality, because that's powerful. I mean, this is what, in his book, The Power of Now, it's what makes prayer effective. It's what makes meditation effective. It's not so much what we say, it's the intention behind it. And so it's very powerful. And in this way, we wind up not being victims of the events of our lives, but co-creators of the events of our lives.
So intent is something to be aware of in ourselves, of and not judge ourselves perhaps so much as the doing, as well as be aware of our intent.
Exactly. I mean, you said it. Not to judge ourselves. There's enough out here that to judge us. And we have the animal kingdom. Hello there.
Well, I think they're coming from that place we're talking
about.
Yeah,
they're coming from intentionality. But yeah, you just said it. It's about being gentle with ourselves. It's about loving ourselves. I really believe that. And it's not always easy to do, because people always, you know, the adage, love your neighbor as yourself. But they never really focus on the as yourself part. It's easy to love my neighbor sometimes, but it's more difficult to love myself. Hmm.
So do you think that our ancestors had contact with star people?
Most definitely. I think that's what they were trying to tell us. If we look at the Bible, if we look at the Quran, if we look at even other say, you know, the Hindu Upanishads or the Mahabharata, you know, they're talking about flying machines, the Vimanas. If we look at the Bible, Jesus leaves in a cloud, he comes in a cloud, the Star of Bethlehem. If we look at Ezekiel and Elijah, flying chariots. I think that's exactly what they were trying to tell us.
I'm wondering how you began your research on this topic.
Oh my goodness. Judy.
Is that going to open up a can of worms?
Not at all. Not at all. It's the great question, isn't it? On December 28th, 1989, I was in Mexico. And I went to the Yucatan Peninsula to see the pyramids at Chichen Itza and Tulum in the Mayan culture. And when I came back to New York that night, I was invited to a party down in Times Square. And I didn't want to go. I was tired. It was cold. But my ego said, go. You can show off your tan and how warm it was. And so I went. I stayed about an hour and a half. No beverages, no adult beverages for me that night. And I went back home. And that night, I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know whether I had to go to the bathroom or what, but there was a being on the edge of my bed. There was a blue light, like a cobalt blue light around this brother. And he had like an aura around him, but he had a jumpsuit that looked like aluminum foil.
How tall was he?
Oh, he was a little guy, maybe 4 feet tall, maybe.
Wow.
He was at the edge of my bed looking at me. He wasn't gray. he was chalk white. He had like the pear-shaped head, and I used to call him Ray-Ban, like the sunglasses, Ray-Ban eyes, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
I'm sure you did.
I mean, I'm telling you, I have never been that frightened. And so what I did was I pulled the covers up over my head, hoping it would go away.
And did it?
Well, not really. When I pulled the covers up over my head, I heard this sound, whoosh, whoosh, and I felt like I was outside. It felt like the temperature had changed. And when I pulled the cover down, no one was there.
Wow.
And this started happening every full and new moon for about 8 months, let's say, 6 to 8 months, probably closer to 8 months. I went to a psychologist because I thought I was crazy. The late Dr. Jean Mundy, she regressed me. And then later on, a few years later, the late Bud Hopkins, we were at a conference in Long Island and he did. But I just kept having these contacts. And I'm not a nuts and bolts person. I don't care about propulsion systems and back engineering. I mean, I'm sure it's very interesting. But I'm more interested in the spiritual transformation.
Right.
If there is one. Some people don't have a spiritual transformation. Some people, they have trauma. And but I didn't have that. I mean, I was scared. And there were some kind of weird things that did happen. But overall, I felt my experiences were positive. And I wanted another, I wanted to add my narrative, because at that time everybody was saying, you know, how bad it was, how painful it was, how evil they were. And I'm saying the beings that I interacted with were not that way.
So
and
they,
I've seen three different races. I've seen three different races.
That's what I was going to ask you. So they were different beings each time.
Yeah, well, the first few years it was the little folks. I'm telling you about.
Right,
it was
right.
Them. And you know, there were tall people among them, but they were little short people. And then on two occasions, I some reptilians came into my room. They were beautiful, but again, I that was after the fact. I was scared to death. They just walked in my wall. They walked in my apartment at 45 West 81st Street, the Excelsior Hotel between Columbus and Central Park West. I'm sure you know. And they just walked in, and they were big. They came at two different times. The first one looked like Spider-Man, but with alligator skin. And his eyes were yellow, where mine are white, but his pupils were vertical, like a cat. And I mean, this brother was big, okay? Like he went to the gym or something. And then at another time, it was like an alligator. Walking on 2 feet came in. And they didn't, the only thing they said to me, their mouths didn't move, was, don't be afraid, calm down, don't be afraid. And they just looked at me. Well, he put his hand on me, it's like a claw, you know, hands, you know, they're just different looking. But, okay, that went away. He went away. And then, you know, I got my nerves together. But this was happening. The last people I've seen, but this was since 2013, were the blonde-haired, these blonde-haired brothers.
Okay.
They look like they come from Europe or something.
Right.
Viking kind of looking people.
And how tall were they?
Nordic people. These people are big.
Okay.
I tell you, they must have a gym on the ship or something because they're like pumped. And the blonde brother, he healed my leg. I had a blood clot. He had a little hoodie on, not a hoodie, the cowl that they wore back in the Renaissance. And he put his hand at me, and a green light came out of his hand and hit me in my stomach. I didn't feel it. I wrote it down in my diary, July 4th, 2013, 9:50 p.m. But when I got up the next day, I got out of bed, and I looked at my leg, and it was healed.
Michael, you're pretty tall. How tall are you?
I'm 6'1".
How tall was this being?
Oh, they have to be like 7 feet tall. They could play basketball. They're big and built. Even the reptilians. I mean, these guys, you know, they're just pumped.
Right. Wow.
And the Nordic guy, I could see his muscles through his through the hoodie, through the cowl.
Yes.
You know, just built. You know, I wish I was built like that.
And again, he communicated telepathically with you?
No, he didn't say anything. He just looked at me and did like this with his hand.
Right.
And yeah, because I had a blood clot that they said could have killed me. It was as long as my leg. I don't know how I got it. I was under a lot of stress. My dad had died. My wife and I had broken up. And I had to go to New York to bury my dad. But I knew when I flew back to North Carolina, I would have to move out. So I was grieving his death, and I was grieving the death of my marriage. I was a mess.
So do you feel that the purpose of that last contact was to do a healing on you?
Well, whether it was or not, it did. He did it. My leg was better. I'm no longer on the Coumadin. I'm no longer sticking myself with... I was injecting my stomach with a Enoxaparin, which is supposed to be a blood thinner or something to break the clot. So, yeah, I mean, he healed me.
Right.
I guess they have plans for me.
What does your doctor say about that?
That's a great question. But I'm like the government. I'm like the government. I don't tell the truth. I didn't tell him the truth.
it's just one of those strange miracles,
yeah.
Right?
He was... You know, he was more upset. It was just, he kept saying, well, what happened? I said, the medicine's working. Look what, he said, no, because you were here 10 days ago and your delay was big. I said, maybe the man, he kept going on like interrogation. And then I said, look, brother, aren't you happy? Just be happy. Aren't you happy? I'm well, be happy. And so, you know, he was a little skeptical. I came back 1 week, they drew my blood again. And then I said, I don't want to take the Coumadin anymore. That stuff, it probably saved me until the blonde hair brother came. But,
right.
You know, that's poison. That's rat poison. It was something.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I had it. But I still suffer from it because I couldn't shave. If I hit myself, I would bruise real easily. I just didn't. I'm just glad they fixed it for me. That's all I can tell you.
Well, we are too.
We are too. And we're going to take a little musical break here. We're going to listen to a song called The Messenger by a friend of mine, David Arkenstone. And I was fortunate to play violin at a performance of that piece at the Space Symposium in Colorado Springs last year for 2,000 of the space technology business people. I was listening. We didn't hear a lot of extraterrestrial discussion, but it was really fascinating. So let's listen to the music. We'll come back and talk some more.
Sure. Yes, I've written 2 books. I'm working on a third now. The first book I wrote was called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. And the second book is called A New World, If You Can Take It, God, Extraterrestrials, and the Evolution of Human Consciousness. And here they are, Alien Scriptures.
Right, and you can get them on Kindle too, right? I have a Kindle. I want to download
Kindle, Nook, yes, Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Terrific.
Yes, sir.
Now, when I first heard that, Alien Scriptures, at first I was thinking that you discovered the scriptures of the other, the people on other planets. And then I realized, I think you're referring to our own scriptures.
Yeah, because I believe those scriptures were written by our ancestors trying to describe what they saw. I believe the teachings of some of the prophets and of Jesus were given to them by off-world intelligences, especially the teachings around the issues of love and compassion. And so I just couldn't get enough. I was reading and studying everything I could get my hands on. Now, I want to give credit where credit's due. People like Eric Van Doniken, people like the Reverend Dr. Barry Downing, who's a friend and colleague of mine. He wrote a book back in 1968 called The Bible and Flying Saucers. Morris K. Jessup, who died under mysterious circumstances in the 50s, wrote a book about the Bible and UFOs. And we have a woman. We needed some female energy always. Her name was Reverend Virginia Brasington. And she lived right here in Asheville, North Carolina. And she had written a book late 50s, early 60s about the possibility of UFOs in the Bible.
Is that right? So, what do you think about that? That you're following her footsteps, and literally and geologically?
No question. And the only difference between myself and these people that I named were that I have seen them, but also I think my theology is a little more progressive, in the sense of I don't believe that Christianity is the only path, but it's one of many paths. But all the three major religions all refer to UFOs, I think.
Well, they came with such remarkable insights to that time period that it was quite an impression to the people. So they gave it divine, extraworldly powers. But I think in looking at it like you are, you're getting a little closer to what may have really happened.
Well, what's so important to me about this is that, okay, you don't have Judaism until the Exodus, right? And so you can't, and Christianity comes out of Judaism, as does Islam. And so the three monotheistic religions have ET origins. The Exodus story, right? The Jewish brothers and sisters are out of Egypt, and they're following something in the sky, the pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night. That's an unidentified flying object. It stops, it starts, it leads them. What else could it have been? And so they follow it. And then Yahweh gives them laws. I think Yahweh was an ET. He had temper tantrums and the like, but he gives them laws. And he says, these are the laws that you have to follow in order so people can know that I am your God. Because there were other gods. There were other ETs in that area who they were divvying up the Holy Land. It wasn't the Holy Land then. And so if you follow that train of thought, everywhere in the Bible where you see angel, if you put star person, if you put alien, I don't like that word, but it makes more sense, because angels just means messengers from the Greek angelos. They didn't have wings. I believe that our ancestors put wings on them to try to let people know that these beings could fly.
I have a beautiful minister and his wife that I work with through the Earth Harmony Foundation. We have a food program for needy families. And I was speaking to the Lutheran minister, Pastor Eric, yesterday, and I asked him if he had found any references in the Bible to contact with galactic star nations. And he said he had not, but he said that some people had made references to, for instance, when there was a moving, I think Ezekiel, you mentioned that already, right? The sphere,
yes,
within a sphere?
Yes, Elijah, the wheel within a wheel.
Wheel within a wheel. He mentioned that one, and that was the only one he could think of.
Well, yeah. Listen, I have a lot more leeway in my congregation, in my theology. But a lot of people would say it's how you interpret it. And so either he can't say what he really believes, or he really is saying what he you know, he doesn't see it. We could read the same passage and he may see something else different.
Absolutely.
I think it's pretty clear that people are realizing that the Bible is many things. It's a beautiful book. But they're talking about beings from other worlds. When we get to Jesus, another brilliant Jewish brother, he's talking about my father. My father in heaven, my father. So if his mother's human and his father isn't, then that means he's not fully human either.
So he would be a hybrid of
hybrid,
both?
Yeah, he'd be a hybrid.
Pot human, hybrid. Pot galactic.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
That's why he had different powers that other people didn't, and that's why, in a way, he created a lot of fear in some people, too.
Exactly. I mean, Jesus wasn't Christian. He was trying to reform Judaism. But he was saying, but I'm going to, Moses, in the time of Moses, you only loved other Jewish people. But I'm telling you to love the Gentile. I'm telling you to love the uncircumcised one. I'm telling you to love the Romans. I'm telling you to bring your A game. And he was, if he says that my kingdom is not of this world, which he does say in the book of John, I believe him.
I believe. Literally kingdom, like the place that I come from.
Yes.
Now, speaking of Moses, many people have questioned the story about how Moses received the Ten Commandments. And I'm wondering, was there a possibility that Moses received these Ten Commandments from the star people?
I think he did. I mean, he comes down from the mountain. Mount Sinai, he comes down. Remember in Exodus chapter 33, he's glowing, which is probably exposure to radiation. When he comes down, they're saying he has a veil over his face. He's shining. But the important thing to remember about that, again, is that those Ten Commandments were not for everybody. They were just for the Hebrew tribe. Because if you shouldn't murder, thou shalt not murder. But remember, they go into the land of Canaan. And remember, all the Canaanites are killed, men, women, and children.
And Jericho, they take out the whole town.
Well, yeah, with the wall. They use sound to bring it down. So you didn't murder your Jewish brother. You didn't sleep with your Jewish brother's wife. You didn't covet your Jewish brother's. That was just for the Jewish people. When Jesus comes along, thousands of years later, he says, I know what Moses told you, but I'm telling you, you take that love, not just for your immediate neighbor, but for everybody.
Expanding on that foundation, it's like allowing the tribes of the world to interact with each other.
Yeah, but in a civilized way. And so, but this is what got him in trouble. This is what got, whenever you try to expand your horizons, when you try to broaden parameters, it's threatening to people. We see it today.
And what information have you gotten about, let's say, the pyramids and the time just before the Exodus and how Moses was connected to the pharaohs? There must have been some incredible powers to build those great monuments, and maybe they're older than even that time.
Well, John Anthony West talks about the pyramids being much, much older than what modern-day scholars now say. I'm not an expert on that, and so that's the only thing I could speak to, that archaeologically speaking, there, you know, we would have to rewrite history. The technology, as you implied about how those were made, I mean, we couldn't even duplicate it today. Now, as far as Moses, remember, Moses was an Egyptian. And he grew up with the pharaohs, and he grew up in Egyptian royalty. So he was definitely Egyptian.
So when he was, I mean, he seemed to be on quite a path to break away from where he was from to end up on the mountain and connect with the crafts and messages and higher wisdom to guide people. You know, how do we ourselves become our, I guess, our own Moses to take us out of our own bondage or land of, you know, from our own trials? I think that's what some of the metaphors are about too.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, as Yoda says, you know, in Star Wars, we have to unlearn what we've learned, because we've been taught that everything is outside of us, our salvation. You know, we have to look outside, whether it's government, whether it's nationality, whether it's nationalism. And I think that we have to rethink and just change the whole paradigm that we are the saviors we've been looking for, and that we are not separate. We are part of the all that is. Call it God, call it your higher power, call it what you will. And so we have to start thinking and rethinking. And you, how does one do that? Through meditation, through contemplation, through prayer, through communing with nature, raising our vibration. Buddha talks about our thoughts. Thoughts are things. If we think life is a you-know-what and then we die, then that's what life is going to mirror back to us. So we have to be the change we say we want to be in the world. You want more love in the world? Then be more loving. You want more forgiveness in the world? Be more forgiving.
That's right. I think that, you know, we look at religion and history and we can't really go back and change it, but we can look at it like a play that has a lot of characters, and we can see ourselves as some of those characters in the play, and then we can take on some of the lessons that they learned.
Yeah, I mean, we can't go back and change it, but we can learn from it. I mean, listen, just because somebody said something 5,000 years ago doesn't mean it's true. I mean, the book of Leviticus, you know, the rules and regulations, I mean, you're not supposed to touch a pig skin. Well, there goes the NBA. There's a lot of millionaires would lose their money. You don't stone people to death over adultery. I mean, that's barbaric. And I'm not encouraging people to do that. I'm just saying we live in a different day and time, so we can use common sense as well.
Well, before we take another musical break, I'd be interested to hear what you think about the Star of Bethlehem. I've always been fascinated since I was a very little girl with that story and felt sure that that must have been a galactic craft guiding.
Yes. Let's talk about it when you come back.
All right. What are we going to hear?
We're going to hear a song called Galacticodes, which takes us to a visitation, a landing, and the arrival of a space brother.
I'm ready for that.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that delightful musical interlude, Dove. That was fascinating. I was thinking and reflecting about my experience at Contact in the Desert. And for me, it wasn't so much the keynote speakers and the data that they were presenting, although I did find it fascinating, much of the information, but it was the more experience of connecting with like-minded people and the sharing of all of us together. What was your experience, Michael?
You took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what me. I mean, for me, I've heard this stuff before. Not that I can't learn anymore, but I've heard this stuff before. I have books here from a lot of the people who were there. But for me, again, just as with you, it was the connections that were made, the possibility of working with certain people again. That's what really got me over. And I loved it. But I respect all the speakers. But you know what I'm saying? It's not, I'll be honest with you. There's not a lot of new information coming out. At least in my estimate, it may be said in different ways by different speakers, but it's still the same. You know, people still talking about crop circles, or if their base is on the other side of the moon, or how much does the government know, or what's the Vatican know? I mean, we've been asking these questions for 20, 30 years. And so it's just variations on a theme.
Well, the theme that quite lately has been coming up is that some of the missing children and missing people on our planet may have actually been taken off planet as part of a broader trafficking scheme by the not positive galactics. And that's a pretty shocking idea.
It is, and it's speculation, but I don't know. That doesn't interest me. What I'm trying to do is learn to love. What I'm trying to do is learn to serve. I can't do anything about that. I mean, that's information, and it may or may not be true. But tomorrow I got to go to work. So what am I going to do with that? I can't do anything with that information except know it. But tomorrow, you know, I can serve. I can help somebody.
I think what you're saying is as well, you know, where you put your focus, where you put your attention. I mean, you need to know what's going on in the world, but you also, what can you do with your energy, with your heart, and what you adding your gift to the world. You don't want to take away any precious moments of what you can do.
Well, yeah, I mean that's information, and so I got all the information I want. I live in the information age. I'm looking for a little wisdom now. And so I don't want to be peddling fear. That could be true, and it may not be true. So, okay, I can write that down and have it on a piece of paper, but how does that help me to love? How does that help me feed my neighbor? And for me, that's just information, and I got more information than I know what to do with.
I think that's fascinating to think of this whole topic of contact and connecting with our star brothers and sisters. As how does that make us love more? How does that help us to heal our planet and to heal and to be in community and to overcome our challenges? I mean, how can we use all this new information to expand and enlighten ourselves?
I feel for me is to that we have to move from fear to love. And as you just implied, Dove, it's where you put your focus. I'm not saying live like an ostrich. I'm not saying, you know, stick your head in the sand. But I also know that what you focus on, you create. And I did find a lot of people under the guise of giving information that they were just spreading more fear. And so I'm just trying not to do that.
Right.
If I'm broke, I don't focus on being broke. I focus on how I can make money, you know. And so like Gandhi said, be the change you want to see. Do I focus on some hybridization program that I can do nothing about and the government may or may not be doing? Or do I focus on, okay, that may be happening, but how do I become the person I say I want to be?
Well, I think that we have been having beautiful, wonderful experiences with reaching out to our galactic brothers and sisters through meditation and intention to connect and to be, you know, more of a family. I'm wondering about something that you said where these beings injected you with some kind of a needle which caused you pain. Now, I don't think you gave your permission to these beings to do that to you, did you?
Okay, I'm going to give a short answer. A couple of things happened. First of all, when they put the needle in the back of my head, no, they didn't tell me they were going to do that, and it hurt very, very, very badly. And a friend of mine said, who had these experiences, try to put some parameters up, see if they listen. And I screamed and yelled. I was hurt. And I said, they can't do this. You can't do this. So about a week or two later, they came back. They showed a syringe to me in my mind's eye. and they stuck me in the top of the head. I could barely feel it. So A, I felt they listened. B is that I was told years later when I was talking to a psychic who was in contact with them that, Michael, you chose this lifetime to be a messenger. So you did agree. Now, I don't know what I agreed to them to stick a needle in my head, but I agreed to that. But you know what? It has changed me. My encounters with them have changed me. When we do the stuff we do to animals, they don't ask for it. But we say, oh, well, we're doing that for your good. Well, maybe that was for my good. I don't know. But I get to interpret my own experience. And for me, it was something that had to happen in order for me to be where I am today.
And our community and our global community is evolving. Today, in fact, New Zealand, you know I'm from New Zealand, Michael. New Zealand, yes, became the first country in the world to declare it is against the law to harm an animal in an experiment. And it's punishable now by, I believe, several years in jail in New Zealand. I'm going, yay, great.
Right, but we don't have to. I'm not even talking about punishing them. When I take my dog to the vet because it's ill and it has to get some type of shot or something, it's probably upset. He's probably going, what the hell is going on? But then he feels better.
Dove brought that up this morning. He said that.
Okay. And so, and the other thing is this. We can't use our morality or ethics and say, just because this is the way we feel on Earth, that this pertains to other communities as well. That's arrogant. Well, this is the way we think, so you should think this way too. I don't think that we can do that. Now, I'm not saying you should go take people's sperm and ovum and anal probes and all that, but I don't know why they do that. And it's not the same race all the time. But I do know that I've become a better person, a more loving person, a less fearful person, a better healer, I believe less in separation because of them. And my own hard work. I mean, I had to meditate and go to therapy and all that, but because of those contacts, I'm the person who I am today.
So do you feel a connection to a universal community? Do you feel
Yes.
Yeah, what is that like to feel, to look in the heavens and feel, you know, look at the stars and know that there's friends or acquaintances or star brothers out there? How does that change your life?
Well, how it changes my life is I feel more of a sense of possibility, but I also feel the pressure of living in a community, a planet that doesn't feel that way, because most people are very nationalistic and patriotic. You know, I'm an American, and you're not. I'm a Christian, and you're not. I'm saved, and you're not. I'm straight, and you're not. You know, so I feel the tug of, you know, being at odds with that kind of mentality. I don't have any allegiance to any country. I'm a global citizen. I'm a galactic citizen.
Right.
And so I don't pledge allegiance to any of that.
I'm with you on that one. I've always said, when people ask me, where you have an accent, where are you from? And I've lived in so many countries of the world, born in Fiji, grew up in New Zealand, Australia, London, Greece, Europe, before I came here. I feel I'm not only a global citizen, but perhaps an intergalactic citizen. Maybe we all are.
Yes, 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 yes. And so I don't have those allegiances. But that makes it difficult for people like us can make other people very nervous.
But there are ways that we all transcend that, such as music being international language, and there's nature, which, you know, we all depend on interacting with, and this, I think, as your books bring more people to this type of awareness, then maybe that's another way that we can live in harmony together.
That's exactly right. I mean, the power, we can never, ever dismiss the power of music and other art forms. We just can't. I mean, because that is universal. And it does bridge so-called differences. And so I couldn't agree with you more.
And we use the term universal. We don't use the term it's worldly, you know, so maybe there's a hint there. Maybe that.
yeah, it's universal. I mean, from what if you read some of the literature, star people have music, they have culture, they have civilizations, they have children, they have families. They're not that much different from us.
Well, that brings me to share with you about the Kalapana Star Visitor Sanctuary on the Big Island of Hawaii. I've been interviewing some of the people involved in that project, and it is a piece of land specifically set aside for our galactic brothers and sisters to land their craft. That it's, we're letting them know it's safe to land here. Nobody's going to be shooting at you. You know, we want to have cultural exchange with you, and we want there to be, I interviewed Dr. Michael Sala about the protocols.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, Michael, if you were fortunate enough to be there at that historic moment when first contact truly occurs, say you and I happen to be there at Kalapana, at the Star Visitor Sanctuary, what do you think that would be like, and what would you like to see happen at that moment?
Well, it would probably be simply mind-boggling. I'm sure that I, along with everybody, would be filled with so many emotions. But I would like to see the beginning of some of the walls that we've built around each other collectively and individually. I'm sure they would, at that time, they would begin to crumble. Now, there would be some people, no matter what, that would not happen, and I wish them peace, but it would be the dawn of a new era. And I would just be so grateful to be there, to have been a part of it.
Well, I certainly feel the same way, and there are many other people who are contributing their intention to making this a reality in our world. I think
yes.
that we're close this year. We're very, very close to disclosure. I think disclosure is already happening. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I want to tip my hat to Brother Steve Bassett and Dr. Greer, but I don't think that, you know, we have the Pope talking about it. You know, we have all these countries who've released some of their classified files. More and more people are coming out, and you know, yeah, it's already disclosure. If we can wait for presidents, especially here in the West, you know, they're going to be the taillights instead of the headlights on this thing. But I don't need Obama or Jeb Bush or Hillary to tell me what I already know.
And it's a little frustrating maybe for the people at SETI who are still looking to have some sort of proof about it. I wonder why that's such a hard task for them to find something, some indication out in space that they're being received.
I think it's because, you know, all the people having contact, it's none of the big scientists, not unless they're just not talking about it. It's not the people at SETI. It's ordinary people like you and I. Who are having these contacts, and there's probably a reason for that. You know the old saying, you can't get there from here? An Apache friend told me, the longest journey you'll ever take is from your heart, from here to here. And SETI's trying to get there from here, but it's really about getting there from here.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I'm reading some of Doreen Virtue's books about conversing with angels and fairies, and people, you know, finding ways to get through dimensions. I think that's the curious thing, is how, whether people on Mars, on the Moon, on Venus, you know, how would they survive in these sort of terrible physical situations, the heat, the cold, and maybe some of friends that live on other planets have to penetrate dimensions, and maybe that's something that we don't really fully understand yet.
Exactly. I mean, they could be vibrating. There could be whole cities there that we don't see because they're vibrating at a different frequency. But, you know, because we can't see, taste, touch, hear, or smell it, then it doesn't exist.
But that other dimension that we're trying to get to with feeling, with our heart, with music, with art, with passion, with expression of love, that borders right on that dimension.
Exactly.
And that's why your message is so wonderful, and that's why we're so glad to have you to to let people know that, that it may be hard to get there with our technology, but it may be easier to get there with our heart.
Yes, because you see what happened. Just because you have technology doesn't mean you have the spirituality to go with it.
Well, it's a connection, like between the mind and the heart, between the technology and the intent, and that's where power, I think, is.
That's where the real power is. That is power. That is power. I agree with you.
And is something that somewhat engineered by our space brothers. I mean, our evolution has been on a path that they are overseeing, that they're helping us with. What an incredible planet we are on, with everything we need, life, water, ended up, you know, the water that came from where the comets, all those comets that millions of years kept coming to give us water until the point where life could happen. I mean, when in this whole evolution did these other higher intelligences start working with us?
I think they've always been here. I think they always have. I couldn't know a date, but I think they've always been here and they always will be here. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the things that got me going. When I got visited, the first visit in 1989 CE, what came into my mind is, well, if they're visiting me in 1989 CE, or some people say AD, then they probably were here in 1000, you know, I mean, you know, 1 million BC. I think they've always been here. And no doubt they've had a hand in our creation. I do want to say that I do not believe that I don't believe that God or creation is an ET. And even ETs have a theology, but it's not like a man up in the sky who's going to punish us, you know, if we're naughty or nice. But a lot of star races do believe in an intelligence, a force, if you will. It's just not anthropomorphic like what we do.
I have a question for you, Michael.
Yes.
When you stand under the stars and look up at all the beautiful stars up there, do you ever have an intuition that you feel drawn to one particular star over another one? Like, for instance, I'm always drawn to the Pleiades and Sirius, and I just wondered if you had experienced anything like that.
You know, no, I can't say that I have. I know in my family background, we have a lot of Native American blood. We have a lot of Cherokee. And as you know, in the Cherokee cosmology, the Cherokees say that they come from, their ancestry comes from the Pleiades. But I don't have any particular, I don't feel drawn to any particular star system.
And have you ever seen anything moving in the skies that indicated it could have been a craft?
I have, but I don't know for sure, you know. So I see things. They could be comets. They could be satellites.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
But I know they're out there.
So you started off as an actor for 25 years.
Yes, in New York. Yeah, about 20 years.
And what do you think the role of Hollywood is in guiding, you know, and help in shifting consciousness?
I think it's crucial, whether we want it to be or not. And, you know, a lot of these films have to be approved by the Pentagon, by the State Department. So that goes to show you the connection. Certainly Spielberg, when he was doing E.T. and some of the other movies around A War of the Worlds, there was a reason he was in Washington at times. So I think, you know, we see how the media and entertainment industry shapes our thoughts. It shapes our culture. So they have a vital role to play.
Well, we have absolutely enjoyed having you in the studio with us via Skype tonight, Michael. Thank you so much for joining us. If people wanted to, do you have a website that people could find out more about your books, et cetera?
Sure. My website is michaeljscarter.com. You can pick up my books at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Nook, Kindle, and or paperback. I'm working on a book now. It's a calendar. It's a calendar for everyday spiritual lessons. And I just started it last week, so that may be my next venture. Doesn't have anything to do with UFOs per se, but it does have to do with giving people tools for their own spiritual excavation and cultivation.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to close with a song we usually close with. It's a global anthem that Dove wrote called Voices of the World. And we are really all voices of this world and the worlds beyond. So thank you so much. And
thank you both. Dove, Judy, peace and blessings.
And Martin Luther King.
Good night.
Good night.
Spirit lives on.